This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The Miss North Carolina Beauty Pageant begins this Tuesday. The winner of that will compete in the illustrious Miss America Beauty Pageant. Both contests play a part in perpetuating a certain image of female beauty. Perhaps the best way to express what that image is to describe what it isn't.
The category tonight, top 10 signs you're not going to win the Miss America Pageant. Number 10, your measurements are 36, 24, 36, but not in that order. Not in that order. Mm-hmm. Number 9, the only thing you ever won was a buffalo wing eating contest. And number 8, ignoring advice from friends and family, you're keeping the handlebar mustache. Number 7.
Well, David Letterman is joking, but for many women, the ideal image of beauty is serious business. They spend money, eat less, exercise more, all to reach it. But is the pursuit of that beauty harmful? To tell us about beauty pageants and their impact on female self-image, we have Kimberly Lamb, Assistant Professor of Women's Studies at Duke University. She's joining us by phone. Welcome, Kimberly.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Good to have you. Lasana Harris is with us as well, Assistant Professor of Psychology and Neuroscience at Duke University. Welcome, Lasana.
Thanks for inviting me.
Kimberly, let me start with you and ask you to tell us how these pageants like the Miss America pageant got started.
Well, they go back to at least the mid-19th century. P.T. Barnum had an idea for a beauty pageant, but actually the idea of women displaying themselves live in bathing suits was considered too scandalous, so he had women send in their daguerreotypes to newspapers, and that was the kind of the original incarnation of the beauty pageant. It wasn't until 1921 in Atlantic City when the hotel owners wanted to find a way to extend the tourist industry past Labor Day that we get the modern installation of the Miss America contest.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. You talk about the daguerreotypes. So
yeah.
Photography played an awful important role in promoting these pageants,
right.
Didn't they?
Yeah, I think that it's crucial. There's a way in which the Miss America contest pageant really reflects the development of media culture in the 20th century. The first judge in the first Miss America contest was Howard Chandler Christie, who is a very popular illustrator for magazines of images of women. There's the daguerreotype, as you mentioned. But then in 1954, when Miss America was televised, and I think 27 million people watched that year, Grace Kelly was a judge. That really solidified Miss America in the American imagination.
Now, tell us about the images that women have of themselves and how beauty pageants fit into that.
Well, I think it's hard for me to generalize, but I think that the Miss America pageant does crystallize an idea about perfectibility, that women need to strive to perform a particular idea of femininity, which has been, for the most part, until very recently, white, Anglo-Saxon. And so it, you know, for many feminists, like in 1968, there was an important protest in Atlantic City, really trying to call attention to the commodification of women's bodies that the Miss America pageant represented or crystallized. I think it for many people it shows the pressures that women are under to appear a certain way, and it really underscores the idea that a woman's physical appearance is the foundation of her success.
Well, physical appearance, we can talk about it. It gets a little slipperier when we talk about that certain way, Lasana. Where does that image come from? It's mediated somehow. We see a picture, but how does anybody know what it is they're looking for to begin with?
Right. I think the image is something that evolved out of the culture that we are in. I would say that you can think of the image as being based fundamentally in some evolutionary idea of what physical fitness is for women. So attractive women would be women that have the traditional Coca-Cola bottle shape, for want of a better term. But that isn't the image of women that's being promoted as being successful, right? What's being promoted is a different image that's something I would think is more akin to a Barbie doll figure, where there aren't those caves that was mentioned with the Coca-Cola bottle shape. Mm-hmm. It's an image now that's something that's unique to our culture, to Western society, as a new image of beauty that has also grown out of the culture. So,
what happens? What's the impact on the individual when we see this thing mediated in a mass a publication or mass media like television? In other words, everybody sees it and we all agree for whatever reason, subconsciously, this is it. This is what I want to be.
All right. To tell that story, I think we have to start with children and kids. And so essentially, children are little people that are trying to formulate their own identity. And essentially, that identity is going to guide them throughout their adult lives. And so when adults look at these images, they're already familiar with the culture, and so it strikes them as normal. But when kids look at these images and they're beginning to develop the identity, if they get the signal from the adults that this is a valuable, important image, an image of success, now the child begins to integrate that image into the idea of what it means to be a successful adult. And so in addition to the moral values that you get from your parents, you're also getting images from the media, from culture, that are telling you what images of success look like. And so these things get integrated into your identity formation processes. And as you go through childhood into your teenage years, into becoming an adult, not only is your psychological sense of self being formed, but neurally as well, there are connections being formed in your brain that reflects these things that are becoming your identity. And so essentially, you're being geared towards a certain idea, a particular ideal, that's in line with the culture, and it sort of makes sense evolutionarily that that is so. We don't stick out in this culture because now we have the same ideals that most people do. So it's a cultural issue that ends up being something that becomes part of each individual.
Kimberly, are these images from beauty pageants and perhaps elsewhere in advertising, are they damaging, do you think?
I think, you know, yes and no. I'm stronger on yes than no, but I think as I was saying before, particularly since white femininity has been the norm. In fact, you know, in the 1930s, there was this famous rule number 7 that in the contract for contestants for Miss America, that the woman must be of a good health and of the white race. I think that In particular, the pageants promote an idea of perfection, which and I think the underlying message there is that femininity or women's bodies are fundamentally flawed in some way, and so need to be shaped and prepared and choreographed to present a particularly acceptable image. On the other hand, there are many people, many young women who participate in these pageants, who find them empowering, who see them as a track to a career. The Miss America pageant does reflect some of the inroads that feminism has made on American culture. There's been a shift from the prizes being movie contracts and furs to scholarships. They're completely or completely damaging. Oprah Winfrey participated in the Miss Black America contest. She was Miss Tennessee, and you know lots of people have heard about her. So, and she's very successful. So I think that there's lots of ways to talk about how women negotiate these pageants and use them as a way to find forms of success or social mobility, particularly if we see the pageants on a global scale. I think there's now more than 3,000 pageants that go on globally.
Well, Lasana, you know, you talked about developing your self-image out of these things, but clearly not every woman decides that she needs to be that and watch this when she watches this pageant. I mean, what are the determining factors? But we also know that some of these images, and I'm not just saying beauty pageants, but the idea of a singular vision or a fairly limited vision of what a feminine body should be mm-hmm. does lead to some health problems, eating
sure.
disorders, and emotional problems. And I'm going to ask Lasana this question about why that would happen in some cases and why it doesn't always happen.
Right. I think there are individual differences, there are different personality factors that help determine when these issues become problematic and when these images become problematic and when they don't. So if you think about identity, everyone has a very complex identity. And what's interesting about our complex identities is that if one particular identity is threatened, it's very easy for us to lean on another identity. Say, for instance, if we're not achieving the perfect body type that we think we should have, I can say, well, I'm a great mother or daughter, and that helps me build up my sense of self-esteem, which is very important for us as human beings. The problem is that some people value that one particular identity, the body image identity, way above any of their other identities. And so when that becomes threatened, now they don't have as many defense strategies they can rely upon. And so it can lead them to negative health outcomes, for instance, because they're trying to preserve this image, this sense of self they have that's tied very closely to the image. So agreeing with what has been said before, I don't think that the images in and of themselves are problematic. What becomes problematic is the way people use those images as ideals and the context in which they use those images as ideals.
Kimberly, when we talk about what happens to individuals and particularly to women when they see these things, I think we've forgotten what happens to men and society in general, the way certain values are reinforced for all of us who watch these pageants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, and it is a sad but interesting fact that there is an increase in men's eating disorders. There's no way in which it matches the number of young women who have eating disorders, but that's certainly a factor. And men's bodies are increasingly part of a spectacle culture and are up for display and are consumed, which I think always implies a certain kind of passivity, even though there's a great amount of power that can come from embodying a perfect ideal.
How do we do this, and to what extent is mass media responsible for or a participant in reaffirming these ideas and making it more difficult for us to sort of think our way out of it? I mean, the fact that it's so widely accepted and widely broadcast gives us the impression that everybody agrees with this.
Exactly. It makes it very, very difficult. And so if these are the images that you see every day, this idea becomes reinforced without even consciously being aware of it. Just the fact that you're exposed repeatedly to these images, they're going to have effects on you.
And you said something earlier that's interesting, and I'd like you to amplify it. From a neurobiological point of view, as we're sculpting our identity, your mind is at work creating an identity. The maker of the identity, the mind itself, is changing along with the image. So as the image develops, so do the tentacles, the fingers of the maker.
Exactly.
Are sculpted. Exactly. So they begin to have a preference for that kind of thing.
Exactly. It becomes a very intractable problem. And because identity is so central to who we are as people, then it allows us to do things like change our conception of reality to fit that identity. So for instance, there's research documenting that people with eating disorders, women in particular, when they look at themselves in the mirror, they're actually perceiving a physical form that's very different than how they actually are. And so they're estimating that they're heavier than they are, they're bigger than they are. And if you look at their neural activity during that time, it lines up with the things they are reporting, not necessarily their factual information. And so it's possible for us to distort reality to fit our sense of selves and to fit our identities, to maintain a sense of consistency in the world. Human beings will naturally do that without making great efforts to do so. And so once your mind has now been geared towards this particular image as the ideal, and you've set that as the gold standard for yourself, it's very difficult now to begin changing that. And it's easier instead to change your perception of the physical world, to do unhealthy things and to easily justify them as going after this ideal goal that you now have.
So that's how we maintain this in the face of evidence to the contrary. This is hurting me. Oh, no, it's not.
Exactly. And you see that in many other facets of life as well. I mean, this is not just restricted to images of body issue ideas, but essentially anything that is seen as central or important to your sense of self is going to take priority, and you're going to adjust to suit.
It's fascinating how we manage these seeming dichotomies, and it also seems that if we have women and values that are projected, that are suspected to be ideal, Kimberly, we're also beginning to like the scandal as much as the ideal, and both seem to be embodied in the contest these days.
Yeah, I think absolutely that the Miss America pageant and spectacle culture more generally is generated through scandal. There's you know, for a long, you know, traditionally women have really been made to embody sexuality, but also the moral norms around sexuality. So American culture seems to be particularly good at creating spectacles in which women's association with sexuality is displayed, tested, managed, but also interrupted. So there's the famous Vanessa Williams scandal where the nude photographs from Penthouse emerged at the end of her reign in 1984. The more recent photographs of Carrie Bergeon, these sort of pretty tame erotic photographs emerged. That was really the death knell to her reign as Miss California. Those are the things that people are watching for, and I think that it's interesting that women are asked to sort of walk this line between a certain kind of sexual display in bathing suits and evening gowns, and they're a certain age and they're expected to be attractive, but then there's always a sort of sexual or erotic underside that gets exposed, and it's really women's bodies where those lines and morals get acted out and reaffirmed.
And that's very interesting, if I could just follow up on what you're speaking about. Mm-hmm. So that I think speaks to some of the irony of this whole process, right?
Right.
And so you have a set of moral values that say eroticism is bad.
Right.
And then you have a separate set that reward you for being attractive and showing signs of your sexual strength.
Right.
It's very interesting that we're able as a culture and as individuals to have those what would seem like competing and contradictory values within ourselves. The reason why I think this scandal drives it is because people that are seen as highly attractive, people that are beauty pageant contestants, for instance, they're usually high status people within society.
Right.
And we tend to pay much more attention to them. Now, one thing that we seem to enjoy as human beings is when the high status lose their position.
I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Kimberly Lam, Assistant Professor of Women's Studies at Duke University, and Lasana Harris is a psychology and neuroscience professor at Duke. Thank you both for being on the program, and thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.